Dairy farms are the backbone of Maine's rural communities. In addition to maintaining working agricultural landscapes, organic dairy farms protect natural resources and also act as economic drivers for their communities by creating jobs on the farm and for related agricultural businesses. But these farms are in crisis, with many farmers exiting the dairy industry due to a confluence of factors, from loss of contracts to lower pay prices in relation to soaring production costs. Today, we'll address these topics and others related to the state of organic dairy in the Northeast. This is Common Ground Radio, and I'm Holly Cederholm, your host for an hour-long discussion of local food and organic agriculture brought to you by the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. Today, I'm joined by Jackie Martinez Perkins, who grew up on a small, award-winning organic dairy in central Maine. She has worked in various aspects of the dairy industry, including as an artificial insemination technician and a herd manager before becoming the organic dairy and livestock specialist for the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. Her work includes supporting organic dairy and livestock operations through management and organic certification considerations, as well as helping to develop policies regarding organic production. Jackie, welcome to Common Ground Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I'll also be talking with Chris Grigsby, who has been the certification director for MOFCA Certification Services since 2016. In this role, he oversees MOFCA certification programs and is the point person for the program's accreditation with the United States Department of Agriculture's National Organic Program. Chris is an advocate for local and regional food systems, as well as the integrity of MOFCA certified organic and the USDA organic standards. Chris, thank you for joining us.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And our third guest for today's conversation is Olga Moriarty, the executive director of the Northeast Organic Family Farm Partnership. The partnership was launched by Gary Hirschberg, co-founder of Stonyfield Organic, in response to 135 contract terminations to Northeast Organic Dairy Farms in August of 2021. The organization's goal is to increase the demand for organic dairy in the Northeast to provide a more stable market for organic farmers. Olga, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here.
So for people who aren't familiar with how organic dairy is produced, what are the key differences between conventional dairy farming and certified organic dairy production?
The way I like to explain it to people is that it's a management style. You can have good or bad management in either case, but it's essentially organic dairy is more like country living and conventional dairy is more like city living. And so it all depends on your management styles and your living conditions.
Jackie, I like that a lot. I've never heard the city and the rural distinction. That's pretty good. We've been doing a fair amount of like consumer education around what organic is and maybe what it isn't. And there are some misnomers out there, but I would also add in and just say that, you know, the three big things that I like to talk about when we're talking about organic dairy, what differentiates it is what the cows are eating, you know, where they're spending their time, and then how they're treated, you know, when they're sick or if they get sick, when they get sick. And those three things just being easy ways to talk about organic dairy, you know, they're eating organic grain, free from GMOs. They are eating free from synthetic fertilizers. There's no hormones, antibiotics. They're inside very only as needed, you know, for milking. They're getting at least 120 days on pasture outside eating and acting like cows, happy cows. They're getting at least 30% of their diet from actual hay and forage. They're treated like cows want to be treated. You know, they're overall, they're living happy cow lives because it's baked into the regulations for being certified organic. And those are things that, you know, some conventional farms strive towards, but, you know, they're not being held accountable to it. So we just know that certified organic cows on dairies are getting that access to pasture, a natural diet, and being treated with the utmost welfare.
Yeah, and Chris, I know that you have experience with the organic certification process with MOFCA. So how do those standards play out from a national standpoint?
Yeah, as you mentioned, Holly, so MOFCA is a USDA accredited certifier. So we are, you know, certifying to those USDA standards. And as Olga and Jackie mentioned, you know, I think those are sort of the big pillar pieces around, you know, those requirements. And I'll just add that certified organic dairy is certified under two of the production scopes under the National Organic Program Regulation. So it's crop and livestock. So there are different provisions and requirements for each of those production scopes. And so a typical organic dairy farm is going to have to be adhering to both of those. You know, there's also record keeping requirements that sort of tie into the, you know, annual on-site inspections and verifications of compliance and things like that. And then I would just add that we have seen, especially with the lack of, you know, processing for fluid milk in our region and sort of the challenges with, you know, cost of production and things, which I know we'll get into, seeing more people go for value-added dairy products. And so that brings in a third production scope, which is the processor handler scope. And there's certain other requirements for those operations there. So in some cases, you know, a dairy operation that's creating value added may also have, you know, may be certified to three different scopes all at the same time that they're managing.
So Chris, I have a follow-up question related to organic standards for you. So Olga was mentioning that producing happy cows is baked into the organic standards. And I know that the National Organic Program recently published its organic livestock and poultry standards rule, which was effective as of January 2024. And I don't know if there are some examples for people who don't have the, you know, a baseline knowledge in organic or in livestock production as to like, what are some welfare standards that are just part and parcel of organic?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as you said, the organic livestock and poultry standards rule was published in January 2024. It has a 1-year implementation date. So as of January 2nd, 2025, all certified operations that are, you know, producing under the poultry livestock, you know, scopes would have to sort of meet the new criteria there. And so what this rule did was it did bring in additional animal welfare requirements, specifically related to like physical alterations, some healthcare pieces, clarified some of the housing things. And, you know, so specifically, again, where this is poultry and livestock, it eliminates the loophole that existed for like second story porches as outdoor access for like some of the larger poultry houses. But again, across all of the livestock scope, yeah, physical alterations, clarifications around some of those things, but specifically, you know, adding in welfare pieces and slaughter and transport requirements, then those were kind of missing before as well. I'll mention too that this OLPS, the Livestock Poultry Standards Rule, was actually a reissuing of the organic livestock and poultry something or other. I forget what that acronym was, but back in, you know, 2016, 2017, it was published, but then it was withdrawn because it wasn't deemed to be aligned with OFPA, which is the Organic Foods Production Act law, which is sort of the tandem for the National Organic Program regulations.
Well, thank you for sharing a little bit more about that. You had started to dive into a little bit of the current state of organic dairy by mentioning some of the factors that are impacting the dairy industry. And I wanted to just walk it back a little bit and kind of have a picture painted of like what is happening for dairy and organic dairy specifically in Maine and the Northeast. And how does this compare to dairy production in the region previously? I don't know if Jackie or Olga, you want to start with that?
I'll preface this by saying our organization, the Northeast Organic Family Farm Partnership, is focused on dairies throughout the whole Northeast. Well, from New York up through Maine. So I'm not specifically in Maine, and I know this is a Maine audience. So Jackie, I look forward to, you can, you know, get some more specifics in here around Maine. But I did look up right before this call, tried to understand exactly how many dairies have been lost in Maine. And 25 years ago, and this is just all dairies. Apparently there were 700 dairy farms in Maine, and now we have about 145. That's all dairies. And since the pandemic, it seems like Maine has lost about a third of its dairy farms. This is not unique to Maine. This is consistent throughout the whole entire Northeast. And organic dairies are particularly hard hit, most specifically in the last 4 to 5 years, but definitely over the last 2 years. You know, a dairy farm back 20, 30 years ago was a small dairy, you know, less than 60 cows. And with the competition from larger farms in other areas of the country and that competition of that mass-produced milk coming in, dairy farmers are forced to figure out how to stay in business. And for most dairies, that meant get large. So you had to either get large or you're going to sell your herd. And then came along organic, which offered a premium for dairy farmers if they changed their management practices a little bit. For a lot of farms who were close to being able to meet the organic standard. And that was seen as advantageous. And there was a large on bringing of a lot of farms who were converting from conventional to organic to add into the, already existing organic farmers who did it just because that was their desired management practice. And then there was a bit of we had a flux of organic milk in the market, which about, 5 to 10 years ago, made it so that the premium wasn't as high as it used to be. So just supply and demand, there was more milk, organic milk produced in the region. So we lost some farms. But most recently in 2021, one of the major buyers of organic dairy, Horizon, which is owned by Danone, made the decision to pull out from the whole Northeast. So that left 89 farms, I think 14 of them were in Maine, without dairy contracts and needing to find another contract. And when we lose a large buyer of milk and reduce competition in the region, it creates a wave throughout the whole entire region, which is pretty devastating. And the way dairy works, dairy is like the hub. I mean, it's sort of like the central to the ag economy. This is all dairy. I would say if you talk to vegetable farmers, they're going to talk about how important it is that we have our tractor dealers and our mechanics, and we have our truckers, and we have just ag service providers. And dairy uses a lot of those service providers, and it really holds that foundation for all of the farming community in the whole Northeast. So when we lose a lot of dairy farms, or dairy farms are suddenly jeopardized and losing their contracts, it creates a huge ripple. And that's what happened in 2021 when Horizon said they were leaving the region. Fortunately, a lot, I would say, through the whole Northeast, it was actually 150 farms that received contract termination letters, because it also, when Horizon left, it made Maple Hill Creamery, which was another buyer of organic milk, more in the Western Northeast New England region. They also had to pull out because of complicated reasons. But in any case, all of this jeopardized organic milk in the Northeast. And you combine that with inflation, and you combine that with increased organic feed cost, as we are heavily reliant on feed that is coming from other regions of the world, like Ukraine. And when that happened, the price of organic grain just skyrocketed, and it put our remaining farms that are still here and really holding on by a thread at total risk, not knowing how to be able to stay afloat. So what was a great market opportunity for a lot of farms to go into organic, for a lot of reasons farms do this, but one of them was an economic incentive. Suddenly those organic dairy farmers were put at extreme risk. And again, this was mostly heightened in the last few years, which is why putting a lot of emphasis right now on understanding how we can support those remaining farmers so that we do not lose any more is of utmost importance, which is why I'm so glad you're doing this recording right now. It's so important to remember that when we lose dairy farms, and especially when we lose organic dairy farms, they do not come back. They never do we get another farm that pops up in its place. The barrier to entry is way too high. And then the institutional knowledge that is lost when we lose one of these farms, which in most cases a multi-generational farm where all this information has been passed along, and land stewardship has been generation upon generation, it's just very difficult to build that back. So long answer to your short question.
No, that's great. It's I did ask for a picture painted, and you did a great sweep of a lot of confluences that have been happening in the dairy industry. And we're going to tease out some of those moving forward in today's conversation. But before we do, Jackie and Chris, I don't know if either of you want to weigh in on anything Maine specific in terms of what the dairy landscape looks like.
Yeah, I sure do. This past spring, MAFCA collected some financial information from what is currently a small cohort of organic dairy farmers, and tried to be diversified in our collection techniques in that we had some beginning farmers and we had some farmers that were looking to transition ownership to a new generation. And we also kind of worked in different sizes of dairy farms. And in that picture, we got a little bit of a cost of production. And roughly in 2022, that's the the financial information that we were gathering. On average, the base price, and of course, milk pricing is its own monster. But essentially, farmers get paid a base price. And then if they have good components in their fat and their protein, they get paid a little bit more per every 100 pounds of milk. And then if their milk has low bacteria counts, they get paid a little bit more for every 100 pounds of milk. And when you think about organic dairy cows, on average, depending on breeding and how much grain you're feeding, they're giving anywhere from 50 to 80 pounds of milk per cow. Think about it, roughly every two cows, you're getting paid $30 a hundred, $30 for every two cows for a day. And so that was the average pay price in 2022 and the average cost. So we kind of broke it into farmers without debt and farmers with debt. And that is telling in a way of sussing out why people aren't getting into dairy. So on average, it's right around $40 a hundred if you don't carry any debt, and it's right around $60 a hundred to make milk if you do carry the debt that it takes to either get into dairy or to make infrastructure upgrades. And Olga had talked about how switching to organic initially, when it was a new thing for dairy to switch to, that was one of the bigger reasons that farmers in Maine switched to organic. They were already on pasture. They already weren't using that many antibiotics. They switched their grain to organic grain. They didn't have to make any management changes. And at the time, a lot of these older farmers that may or may not have had succession plans saw this as a way to not have to get bigger for no reason. And so that's kind of the more depressing financial side of things, is that it costs a lot not just to make milk, and you're not getting paid unless you're going very above and beyond to manage your components and your milk cleanliness. And those things are impacted by different feeds, different weather, different employees. There's just lots and lots of struggles around that. In Maine specifically, there's a housing crisis. And so finding employees that also have housing and transportation, a lot of farms are thinking about putting housing on their property, and then the costs around that. And are there any programs that can help them with that? And so between banks not really wanting to finance dairies and just your basic cost anyway of all of these little pieces of the business, it's hard to find financial backing, and more farmers are looking toward grants. And then that's not really a skill that they have in grant writing. And so one of the best kind of technical assistance aspects that we can offer here in Maine is some of that deep dive into financials, which Mafka is currently working on.
Yeah, and I guess I would just add, you know, from our perspective in the certification space, just to sort of share some metrics around, you know, painting the picture here. And so, you know, as was mentioned, I think it was like maybe, you know, mid-2000s, we saw sort of that, you know, these opportunities in the organic milk space, lots of transition, lots of moving there. And then we had another spike in, I think, you know, right around like 2014, 2015, 2016, when there was, you know, again, organic was growing in the marketplace, there was more demand, you know, from these large buyers and haulers, like, we need more organic milk. So we saw another increase during that period. And, you know, at that time, 2017, I think for Mafka anyway, was the highest number of dairies that we certified. And so, you know, Olga mentioned, you know, we went from 700 down to 150. We had 77 dairy farms certified in 2017, and we're down to 53 today. So just in that, you know, 6-7 year period, we've seen, you know, that type of a reduction. And I think just to follow up on the grain comment earlier too, like it's just this weird vicious cycle where, you know, adding grain to an animal's diet is going to increase that milk production, as Jackie said, and the components and the quality, but the price going up So you get this situation where the farmer can't afford the high priced organic grain. So then therefore the milk production goes down and they don't, there's less income to be able to sort of purchase that in. And so it just ends up being kind of a really tough situation. And as Olga mentioned, it's like the reliance on imported grain versus domestic production and those types of things. And then the last thing I just wanted to mention is that there was sort of, and there still is, right, the grass-fed milk resurgence, which is great. But for dairies in Maine, there's no access to that market right now. There are no grass-fed milk trucks that are coming to Maine to pick up. So while we have opportunities and there's like the OPT grass-fed certification program, that's not an option for Maine farms where it is. I think, Vermont, New York, some other states have access to that. So that's also been a challenge where it's like, okay, we're going to go grain-free, but we don't have, that price premium for a grass-fed only, scenario either.
So folks who aren't familiar with how the dairy industry works and might be struggling a little bit to understand the precarity of the situation, I'm wondering if someone could speak to how farms produce milk, fluid milk, and then rely on buyers who are then, trucking it elsewhere. I think people might assume that, similar to vegetables that they're buying at the farmer's market, their local dairy farm is producing local milk, and they might see some of that in a retail space, but a lot of these farms are producing way more volume than can be sold locally. And a lot of these issues that you're bringing up are around this wholesale system of fluid milk. So I wonder if someone could just kind of describe how an average farm has a market for their milk.
I'm happy to take a first stab at that. I am not a dairy farmer, but I will say, to give the big picture, when we look at, dairy farmers are somewhat like anonymous, right? You drive by, you see the farm, you might not even see the name of the farm. You usually don't see who they're selling their milk to. One thing, which I know we're going to talk about, is what consumers can do, but you can try and learn what that local dairy farm that you drive by, where do they sell their milk to? I just put that challenge out to you as you listen to this. Right now in Maine, there are two buyers of milk. It's Stonyfield and Organic Valley for organic dairy, I'm saying. And again, there used to be a third, which we don't have anymore. Farmers, traditionally, they would get bottled much more locally and they were getting delivered right to the front porch. But today, those farmers are mostly selling to trucks. They're selling to Organic Valley or they're selling to Stonyfield. A very small percentage of them have the ability to process on farm. And that is, while a lot of people will say, why don't all these dairy farms just start making more of a premium by making their own products? Wow. That would be amazing. However, the skill set, the infrastructure is immense in order to take that on. And it has an incredible risk, financial risk, to do that. I think in Maine, I was looking at, there are, I think, about 9 organic dairy farms that are selling direct to consumer, whereas there are, 53 in total. So it looks like, from my records from last year, and you guys can correct me on this, it was 38 are selling to Organic Valley and 6 are selling directly to Stonyfield, roughly. Those are the rough numbers. And the reason why that is a farm is going to be, focused on making really high quality milk, managing the land, managing their herds, doing it in a way where they can still sustain their numbers, which are typically much smaller. I know the average herd size. I would love to know if you, Jackie and Chris, know that for Maine farms. But when I look at like the Stonyfield supply chain, the herd size for those farms is about 66 cows. These are very small farms. A small farm like that, a buyer is making lots of stops to lots of small farms, and it becomes expensive to do that, to stop at all of these smaller farms, especially Maine. That's like, as Chris is saying, it's at the end of the truck routes. And right now there's not a grass-fed truck that's going through Maine. But for a farm to try and pivot to producing and doing a value-added product on their farm is exorbitant. So our farmers are kind of forced into a system where, if you're going to continue milking cows and stay in business, you're going to sell to the only two buyers in town. And, a big sort of big picture issue that we're all trying to work on is, how can we figure out how we can get some more competition in the whole Northeast? And this is, you know, we need more processing here. We need grain to be produced, at least in the US. That would be huge. It'd be wonderful. It could be in the Northeast. I would love to see Maine become a grain grower for not just human consumption, but also for livestock. That'd be in organic markets. These are things that are huge hurdles that make it difficult for farms to do anything other than selling straight to a truck. It is important, I think, to get to know where your farms are selling their milk to. And it's important to remember that these buyers of our milk need local support. Like, this is something you can definitely do, is, and I'm not just here, I don't get paid by Organic Valley or Stonyfield, but as the two buyers of Maine organic dairy, you know, that is a local product. And when you go to the store and you're buying Organic Valley and Stonyfield, you're supporting local farms in Maine.
You are listening to Common Ground Radio on WERU 89.9 FM. I'm Holly Cedarholm. And on today's show, we're talking about the organic dairy industry in the Northeast with Olga Moriarty, Executive Director of the Northeast Organic Family Farm Partnership, Jackie Martinez-Perkins, Organic Dairy and Livestock Specialist with the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, and Chris Grigsby, Certification Director for MOFCA Certification Services. The Northeast Organic Family Farm Partnership and MOFCA are working together to promote local organic dairy.
So I want to back it up just for people that don't know, like they don't conceptualize dairy in general, because I grew up in a dairy farm and I also had a family cow. And if you think about milking your family cow, they're going to give you a 5-gallon bucket of milk every day. What are you going to do with all that milk? How much milk does your family drink? They're not drinking 5 gallons every day. So then do you want to be the one? This is why the truck backs up to the farm. You see those big tanker trucks driving down the road with whatever milk company written on the side. And the whole reason they back up to the farm is because, are you going to take the time to make ice cream and butter and do something with the whey after you've made cheese? What are you doing with that? And to be completely honest, a lot of the time when I had my little family cow who was giving me 5 gallons of milk a day, a lot of it went into the compost pile and onto the garden, or you have to integrate and have pigs or something else that will consume that extra dairy. And so this system was created where, okay, we can manage pastures with more than one animal. You guys can pick it up and you can process it and help balance our loads to then distribute it to others. And so that's why this whole system of producers producing for then wholesalers to buy came into being. And just like Olga said, there used to be one in every town. There was one in the town I grew up in. I live in this historically very dairy area of the state. And it's that way just because, what do you do with all of it, really? So that's me backing up and be like, in reality, how much yogurt can you actually eat?
And I want to add on to that, Jackie, because you just said a term that I was not really familiar with until I started working in dairy, and that's called balancing. This was something I had no idea as a consumer, like what that means. Like, why not just make all of your dairy into yogurt or into ice cream? Okay, well, there is this balancing that happens in the milk, and it changes depending on the season and what the cows are eating. And so when people in dairy talk about butterfat content, they talk about, you know, a cream being very, very profitable or an ice cream being very, very profitable. Well, in order to make that, if you've ever bought like a cream line whole milk and the cream floats to the top, you see how much cream there is in a bottle and how much non-cream or like the skim or the one, you know, that's at the bottom. Well, that's how much other product comes out of that cow, right? What happens to all of that, which would be the skim or the whey or whatever? It needs a place to go. It needs to be made into something. Otherwise, there's immense amounts of waste. So these big companies that are buying the whole milk, all the product, they are able to separate and help balance so that the farmer is getting a fair pay price based on, you know, what's actually in their milk, and then being able to make it into other products. So they're making the cheese, the cream, the ice cream, the half and half, the skim milk. And how important that is and how complicated it is. It's very, very difficult balancing milk and moving all of that product around. I was fascinated by it when I learned about it.
So that brings up another point that I thought was interesting is that there's some people that say, well, dairy consumption is down overall. And frankly, dairy consumption is not down. Fluid milk consumption is down. And so in the 80s, cows' genetic makeup was to make lots of fluid milk when fluid milk was popular. And so now that we're looking at more dairy products, those dairy products are typically made with the fat from the milk. And so the genetic profile of the cows is having to shift, and getting the breeding the way that you want to make a high fat content milk takes time. It takes time to not only breed the cow, but then it takes 2 years to grow that cow to then see if her genetic profile can be proven in the milk that she produces. And, oh, is that family line going to actually carry on down the line through the genetics? And so it's all just very frustrating.
Well, and it ties back to what was mentioned before about when a farm goes out of business, especially an organic farm that goes out of business, the barrier to reentry is huge because you've just invested, you know, into the genetic line of your cow, the infrastructure, all of those pieces. I wasn't aware of those breeding challenges, but it makes it seem infinitely harder when there's a loss. There's also this great genetic loss.
Well, and Chris can speak to the origin of livestock rule and how much more imperative it is to keep our herd lines going.
Yeah, absolutely, Jackie. Thanks for that. Because I think that that's a big, you know, thing for folks to sort of be aware of as well is, you know, the organic regulations and the rules and all of the different certifiers that are accredited in this like public-private partnership with USDA, you know, there sometimes can be variations in interpretations of what the rules actually say and what that means in practice at the farm level. And so, you know, we had, and again, a lot of times it has to do with the growth in the market and like opportunities and people seeing those opportunities. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is a great, you know, price premiums, let's go. But what you tend to have in those sort of situations is that it's, you know, the motivation to get certified and fall under the organic regulations is, you know, economic and maybe not necessarily philosophical. And so sometimes there can be those situations where, you know, something happens where it's like, hey, that's not how this certifier is interpreting that rule or that certifier. And so the origin of livestock rule that was finally moved forward and published a couple of years ago basically was addressing like different loopholes and different interpretations that sort of existed. And so, you know, one of them is around transition, and the way that the regulations are set up is that if there's an existing, you know, non-organic conventional dairy with a herd, they have to go through a 12-month transition period where they're, you know, feeding certified organic grain and they're moving things into full compliance with the organic regulations over that 12-month period. MOFCA's interpretation of that transition was, you know, one-time transition, whole herd transition, you know, per farm kind of a situation. But what ended up happening was there was different interpretations and, you know, what came to be known as the continuous transition loophole. And that was where, like I said, not so much in the Northeast. I think, you know, the certifiers here are all pretty well aligned on that one-time whole herd transition. But, you know, out in the Midwest and West, there were these situations where, you know, organic cows were being born, you know, managed organically last third of gestation, and then being moved off the organic farm, you know, raised on like conventional, you know, feed and lower prices and those types of things, and then transitioned back into the farm. And, you know, for certifiers like MOFCA and a lot of folks in the organic sector and even consumers were like, how is this happening? What's going on? And then obviously like creating kind of a market disadvantage for, you know, all of those costs of production that Jackie and Olga sort of had mentioned earlier. You know, that was something, again, it was flagged early on. It took a really long time for the National Organic Program to move that proposed rule forward, but they finally have. And so now we have a little bit of a reset in that rule and these new allowances and the confirmation that, yes, it's one time, it's whole herd. So you can't do this continuous transition loophole, you know, anymore. But I think that all came maybe a little bit too late, you know, too little too late kind of a situation where we had already seen a lot of the damage done by, you know, large mega dairies in the Midwest and West coming into organic, flooding the market, prices are stagnant, cost of production going up, like just all of those things kind of matched up together. But like I said, at least we now have that rule, and it's, it's consistent across the board. And then I wanted to add kind of a point to the last piece as well around, Maine being at the end of the line with the trucking routes. I think New York is the closest processor of fluid milk. I could be wrong on that, but we used to have more local. We had one in Mass. Now it's really pushed out there. And so obviously, fuel costs and trucking costs and all those kind of things keep going up. And so what happens is, when, as was mentioned, we lose one dairy, they're never coming back. There's also ripple effects with the other dairy farms that are on that truck route, right? So it's like they need a certain amount of milk to make the truck routing profitable. And so, okay, we lose one dairy here in this area or on this route. All of a sudden, those other farms are now in a little bit more of a tenuous situation too. So there's just so much tied in to, losing one farm and those ripple effects down the line.
Glad you brought that up, because I had a follow-up to something that Olga was saying as well. Something that might add more security to the dairy industry in the Northeast would be having market competition among buyers. So having more than Organic Valley and Stonyfield, what are the solutions that would maybe create a robust market competition or get more incentives for trucking for a grass-fed line into Maine? What are some of those bigger processor piece or policy pieces that might make a difference for this region?
Pay price. If you're using your retirement funds just to keep milking cows, and then on top of that, if you're doing that, you can't convince anyone that wants to get into dairy to get into dairy. And Chris had mentioned some people are doing value-added direct to consumer, but once you do that, your cost of production then goes up because you have to buy all your own bottles and your bottling equipment and perhaps a cream separator. There's that much more infrastructure overhead that you are then in charge of, and trucking, and again, balancing your own milk production. And it's why the farms that are successfully doing it in the state of Maine, first of all, it's why those farms are charging $10 a gallon, if not more. And second of all, they are diversified farms. So they have other things that are keeping their farms healthy. And for those that aren't diversified farms, they actually are, because in the off season, when they're not making hay, they have other enterprises on their farm that are feeding into keeping them alive and able to afford their own groceries, wood cutting, working for the town, managing the roads. Even the farmers that don't carry any debt are diversified in the respect that their farm offers them the ability to do other enterprises. And so that then eats into the time that you have to make a quality product. And it's not saying that Maine doesn't have quality milk, because we do. It's more highlighting how much stress dairy farmers have to think about and are under, because they're agronomists, they're veterinarians, they're economists, they're chemists, because we have to balance our chemicals right in order to make sure that our equipment is clean enough for our milk to pass through. So dairy farmers are some of the most intelligent people on the planet.
When you ask what are the solutions, sometimes I feel a little like, you're just pushing the rock up the hill is what it feels like a lot of times around dairy. And very smart, amazing people have been working on this for decades, right? And we keep losing dairy farms. But we are now at a point at which we are starting to figure out the supply and the demand, where we don't have this enormous flush of organic milk on the market. This also goes for conventional dairy too. In order for the Northeast to be able to compete with less expensive milk that is coming from other places. And I will just say, when Chris was talking about all of these market complexities and the competition that was happening, it is more expensive to make milk in the Northeast. And a lot of it, for lots of different reasons, but I will say that when you look at the map and you look at the climate we have, when you look at the history of dairy farming, when you look at our rainfall, we can also complain that we get too much rain now, but we are in the Northeast, we are in a position where we are grass farmers. We grow great grass here. We have a history of dairy that is multi-generational. There is a lot of intelligence around soil management and grass farming here. And you put that with our proximity to urban markets, New York, Boston, Portland. We have more consumers in the Northeast and in proximity to the amount of farms that we have than anywhere else in the country. We are in a very unique position. So when I come down to like, what is the solution to these problems? There are lots of things that we need to be working on. Yes, policy. Yes, relief for our farmers. Yes, we need to talk about pay price. But what we really need to do is regionalize the way we look at milk supply and demand. So we need to keep the milk that's made in the Northeast in the Northeast, and we need people in the Northeast to be drinking the milk that's made in the Northeast. I don't want to like oversimplify, but we can't like state that enough. If we can figure out ways to keep our excellent high quality milk made on small family farms, which is what everybody wants. Nobody wants to be supporting these huge mega farms. We want small family farms. It's what we do in the Northeast. They're outside on pasture. They're happy cows. And we can get them into these markets. That is how we will then increase our pay price. We will increase demand. We will get more competition. Hopefully, there will be more processing that comes into the region. And there is a shining light that there has been more funding coming in and looking at organic since we've had these kind of crises over the last few years. You know, the Dairy Business Innovation Center is a USDA-funded source of a lot of funding going into dairy. And really, it's looking at regions, and it's a regional approach. There are a lot of farms that are taking advantage. I agree with Jackie where it's hard to write those grants, but MAFCA has gotten those grants. Our organization has received those grants. A lot of small processors have received those grants. So there is funding that's coming in to help these farms become more innovative. I mean, they're naturally innovative. The farmers are, like you say, Jackie, the smartest, most like they're fixing things every single day. But until we can figure out how our consumers can identify the milk and the brands that are buying milk, using milk from the Northeast and choosing to consume that, you know, we will continue to have a problem with a lot of milk coming in from elsewhere and undercutting all of our farmers and making it really difficult.
This is Common Ground Radio on WERU FM 89.9. I'm Holly Cederholm, and I'm currently talking about the important role that the greater community plays in supporting organic dairy in Maine and the Northeast with representatives of the Northeast Organic Family Farm Partnership and the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. Common Ground Radio can be heard on the second Thursday of each month at 4 p.m. on 89.9 FM and at weru.org. So how can consumers identify what milk is being produced in the Northeast?
One easy way is you could go and look for organic milk. The Northeast Organic Family Farm Partnership has a website. And again, this is for the whole Northeast, but it can be filtered by state. And you can find farms that are processing their own milk. And then again, I mean, I've been pretty forward in saying, you know, the two brands of the more, you know, generic brands that we see on the shelf, Stonyfield and Organic Valley, those really are sustaining our small family farms in the Northeast. Another thing to note is that 70%, I think that's still the number, of the milk supply going into Stonyfield yogurt is from Organic Valley. So we have however many farms I said there in Maine, 53 farms, like all of that milk for the most part is going into Stonyfield yogurt. So Stonyfield is a great way to support those farms. And then becoming more aware in the store and asking the stores to carry the products that are made from these hardworking family farms, carry more of them. You know, we also have a program in the partnership where we're asking retailers to become partners. And we're developing markets for institutions to be tapping in and getting more of this healthy, you know, organic local milk into schools, into cafeteria programs, you know, getting involved in your, you know, whether it's your public school or whether your kid is going to university, what do those cafeteria programs look like? We are developing those markets, and organic dairy farmers are kind of answering the call. It takes time, but right now in Vermont, we have a small organic processor, who again, kind of is the anomaly here. He's actually put a lot of time and energy into like making a processing line. Not every farm can do this, but a few of these examples does kind of create a seedbed for where this can happen elsewhere, where he is now creating a 5-gallon bagged milk that is going into dispensers in local schools. So kids in his district are drinking or local, organic, fresh milk made on the farm that is delivered the next day. So that's a very exciting project, but it really takes people asking for these products. You know, it really means going into your local Hannaford and saying, I really want to see more Stonyfield, or I want to see more Organic Valley and more Milk House. How do we get more Milk House yogurt in here? Right now, I think they're only in 8 or 12 different Hannafords. Let's see if we can bump that. But we need consumers saying, please, I heard about this really great yogurt. It's made in Maine. I want to consume it, but you don't carry it. Consumers really do have the power to vote with their voices and their purchases. I know it's like an old, old saying, but really as consumers, you're not like helpless here. You can vote with your dollars.
Yeah, I second everything you said there, Olga. And I think that's really, you know, that's the way that we're going to turn this tide. And I just wanted to emphasize when we, you know, from a certification perspective, you know, MOFCA certifies about 530 or so operations, you know, annually, and that's across like different scopes. You know, we mentioned earlier the 54 dairies that we currently certify. And I know that there's definitely a handful of other dairies that are organic in the state that are certified by other certifiers, but they manage huge amounts of organic land base, you know, for feed production. And so, you know, when we're driving around New England and the Northeast and seeing like these iconic, you know, green fields and red barns and you know, cows on a hill, like this is the farm business that we're sort of talking about here that we all love to see. And like, it can't stress enough how important the dairy sector is, you know, from an agricultural economic perspective. Like I pulled numbers this morning, you know, of the 56 dairies we certified in 2023, almost $13 million in gross sales, right? And again, those economic multipliers, you know, they all utilize local sources and services and those kind of things. So there's so many ripple effects to, you know, to this. And I think, you know, spot on, Olga, as far as the consumer demand perspective, you know, these grocery stores and these chains, many of them do have commitments to purchasing local and organic. And I know that there's been a shift with institutional buying to pivot, you know, in that direction as well. The big piece of it is that if they're not hearing from consumers with those demands, they're going to make different buying choices, whether that's at the store level, whether that's, you know, stopping at your local dairy farm and asking them those questions about, hey, who do you sell to? How can I buy your milk? Like those are just hugely important things that I don't think we can stress enough. And it really does move the needle.
I will say I talk to a lot of retailers and they really are responsive to what their customers want. And that's why there is so much organic right now in stores. But a lot of that organic dairy is not from the Northeast. Or, you know, you go to Costco and you see this really, really inexpensive organic dairy. That milk is coming from far, far outside of the region. I'm not going to drop names, but, you know, that milk, that's not your main organic dairy. I'll tell you what, of course, there is a premium to these products. But when you can, you know, one extra pint, you know, one block of cheese, the Stonyfield yogurt, which is not the most expensive organic yogurt, you know, choosing that when you can really does also show that these retailers, like, we are also interested in local, not just organic. It's organic and local. So just don't underestimate that. The retailers will respond.
So one plug for local milk: in order for milk to travel that far and still be shelf stable, it has to be ultra high temperature pasteurized. And when you cook something at very high temperatures, you're killing all the bacteria, which is killing all of any benefit that our bodies can get. This just one of those things that always makes me cringe a little bit is, oh yeah, okay, we can move milk farther than we've ever moved milk before, but at what cost? And there's all kinds of new science around how important our microbiomes are. So it highlights for me the need to keep things as local as possible. And to do that, when we think about our processing and how we need more processing, it takes $3 to $5 million to set up a processing plant. And so maybe one of the solutions would be federal funding to expand a processing plant in order to co-pack, to have different companies using the same facility. And to do that, they would then need to expand. And that's one of the bigger reasons that it's not being done now, is they don't have the capacity.
I wanted to just go back to consumer preferences and consumer shopping to support local organic dairy. And the Northeast Organic Family Farm Partnership has a pledge that they're encouraging consumers to take. And I'm wondering if you could speak to that a little bit, Olga.
Sure. Well, you know, when those contract terminations came through the Northeast, we did a little bit of math and we looked at the amount of consumers that do live in this region, the amount of milk that was made from 135 dairies that were at risk. And we figured out that if 10% of the consumer base in the Northeast bought one extra pint of organic dairy every week when they were shopping, that would use up all the milk from those 135 at-risk farms. So it was just an experiment in saying, if we had a concerted effort to really try and buy products that were made from organic milk in the Northeast, could we actually make a dent? Because let's face it, like Jackie says, 5 gallons of milk per day per cow. I mean, this is a lot of milk we're talking about. So we created a pledge. And this pledge now, while that crisis of those 135 farms has passed, we're now using our pledge numbers to talk to retailers to say, look at all of these people, these consumers, your consumers here in the Northeast, who care about this issue and are saying they are committed to increasing their purchases of this dairy. Please, would you carry more of the SKUs? Could you get more on the shelf? It's just proof that we have this demand. Again, just layering in the how many ways can we show and how the proof is in your purchasing, but here is one way to demonstrate that. So on our website, saveorganicfamilyfarms.org, there is a sign the pledge, and I encourage everyone to go in there and sign their names. There's nothing binding about it and we don't spam you, but it's one way to show your support for this issue.
Ooh, that brings up something in my own brain. When you're thinking about, well, I'd like to try organic dairy, this new organic dairy product, don't focus on just the center shelf. Maybe look down at the lower shelves or up a little bit when you're in your grocery store, because there is a cost for companies to actually pay for that shelving. And so prime shelving is eye level. So if you're looking to experiment a little bit, just you know, like bend your neck.
I didn't know that, Jackie. That's a helpful tip. In our last few minutes together, is there anything else that folks would like to touch upon, whether that's more strategies for individuals reaching out to retailers or any last thoughts around solutions? Really, the floor is yours.
I guess I'll just sort of share the policy piece and how consumers can participate in that side of things as well. You know, I mean, I think, you know, organizations like MAFCA and Northeast Family Partnership and a bunch of other organizations have been, you know, NODPA have really been sort of at the forefront of pushing and pressing USDA to take some action. And I think that, like, without that effort in 2021, who knows where we'd be right now. And, you know, mentioning like the funding coming through business innovation centers and, you know, USDA support like that, it's not outside of the realm of individual action. Your local legislators that work in Augusta, or other states in the Northeast, but even, you know, congressional delegations and things like that. Like, if, you know, if people aren't hearing that there is an issue, that there's a crisis, that there's, you know, demand, like all those kind of things, you know, again, the consumer, the grocery aisles, farmers markets, farm stands, et cetera. I mean, that's one piece of it too, but, you know, really just encourage people to kind of educate themselves about, you know, the current situation and really think about, you know, Are there ways for my voice to be heard in the hallways of the legislature, or these are the folks that can really put pen to paper and make some policy changes that could steer us away from this like national non-regional food system that we saw, you know, broke during the pandemic, and it was the local farms that came to everybody's aid. You know, post-pandemic, we're sort of shifting back to like, oh, I'm just going to go back to what I used to do. So, you know, kind of keeping that all in mind, but just, yeah, can't emphasize enough how important the policy side is and really kind of shifting things in a better direction.
One last thought that I have that I would love to see processors do is driven by consumers. There's room in the marketplace for more lactose-free dairy from consumers. And I would encourage anyone that has trouble digesting lactose to spam the social media of milk companies and say, we want lactose-free, because it doesn't cost them that much to add the lactase into their products.
I feel like I've said a lot about, you know, the role of the consumer in this system. Dairy is an enormous issue. It's very complex, but get to know, I gave a little homework earlier, get to know who the farmer is in your community, figure out who they're selling their milk to, knock on the door, say hello. When they're on the road driving the tractor, wave. You know, it's really showing respect to these hardworking farmers who really are the bedrock of the ag economy in the Northeast. And truly those organic farmers, they are the cream of the crop, pun intended. We cannot lose any more of them. So again, yeah, shop local, try and find the organic farmer. These are simple things, but really you do have the power every day in what you choose to put in your mouth and how you choose to use the money from your wallet to make a difference.
Well, thank you, Olga. That's a great place to stop. I appreciate you all joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Holly.
This has been Common Ground Radio, which airs on the second Thursday of each month at 4 p.m. on WERU Community Radio 89.9 FM. Archives of previous episodes can be found on WERU.org, as well as the WERU app. I'd like to thank my guests for joining me today and the show's editor, Claire Boland. Stay tuned for more great programming.